Now, last week, as we continued with our series of messages from the book of Genesis, Joseph's brothers, well, they got quite a shock, didn't they? You remember that 20 years after they sold him to some traveling merchants, who in turn sold him into slavery, they went down to Egypt and found out that their brother, whom they had sold, had become Pharaoh's right-hand man and was now ruling the entire nation of Egypt. Now, why did they go down there? Because there was a terrible famine in the land. There was no food anywhere. Now, it was actually on their second trip to Egypt to buy food that Joseph revealed to them the fact that he was indeed their brother. Now, at first, they could hardly believe it. But after he spoke to them a while, they in fact did recognize him, and when they realized that their brother, whom they were responsible for him being sold into slavery, when they realized that now he was the man calling the shots over the entire nation of Egypt, they were terrified that Joseph would retaliate against them, seek revenge, and kill him. But he didn't do that. He spoke kindly to his brothers, and we'll get into what he told them to do here in just a minute. Now, Joseph was 17 when he was sold as a slave down in Egypt. For the next 13 years, he was in a very intensive training program instituted by God. God humbled him and taught him discipline and self-control by allowing him to serve as a slave and as a prisoner for 13 years. Now, when Joseph was 30, that is when he entered the service of Pharaoh. For the next 7 years, exactly as Joseph had predicted, there were 7 years of great abundance as far as the crops and the harvest were concerned. And because Joseph was blessed with great wisdom from the Lord, he stored up so much food during those 7 years of abundance, it couldn't even be measured. Well, also, in accord with the prophecy that Joseph made, those 7 years of abundance were followed by 7 years of famine that was so severe, those years of abundance weren't even remembered. And it was during the second year of that seven-year famine that Joseph did reveal his identity to his brothers. By this time, he was 39 years old. He hadn't seen his father in more than 22 years. And after he revealed his identity to his brothers, he talked with them a while and he said, "Go back to Canaan. Tell my father Jacob that I'm still alive. Tell him about all the honor that has been allotted to me down here in Egypt. Bring him and all of your children and come down here and live in Egypt, because there's still 5 years of famine left, guys, and if you don't come down here, you're all going to die for sure." And as we left off last week, all of Joseph's brothers were heading back to Canaan to tell their father, Jacob, who's also called Israel in the scriptures by this time, they went back to tell him that Joseph was still alive. Now, in our message for today, which is entitled Family Reunion, we are going to see Joseph reunited with his dad and all the rest of his relatives. We're going to see how God uses Joseph to preserve this small group of people who would one day grow into a nation of God's chosen ones, the nation of Israel. And finally, we will see the death of Jacob, the man that God called Israel. If you have your Bibles and you would like to follow along, we are in Genesis chapter 45, and we're going to begin at verse 25. And we got a long way to go and a short time to get there. We're not eastbound and down, but we're going to march on. Now, as they arrive back home, Joseph's brothers run up to their father, and they say, "Dad, you're not going to believe this. Joseph is alive. He's the man who's in charge of Egypt." Well, they were right. Jacob didn't believe him. Because 22 years earlier, remember what those brothers did? They sold Joseph to some traveling merchants. They killed a goat and smeared the blood all over Joseph's fancy robe, his coat of many colors. They took it to their father and deceived him into thinking Joseph had been killed by a wild animal. So for more than 20 years, this man mourned the death of his son who was actually alive. He didn't believe his sons when they said Joseph was still living, But they kept insisting and they kept telling him more and more details about the things that happened while they were down there in Egypt. And finally, we are told that his spirit revived. The scriptures say that his spirit revived. That means he felt like the whole world had been lifted off of his shoulders. He was convinced that his son was actually still alive. And he said, okay, guys, I believe you. I believe Joseph is alive down there in Egypt. Take me to see my son before I die. Now, as we began chapter 46, we're told here that Jacob, also called Israel, loaded up all of his children, his grandchildren, and he headed for Egypt. And as they were traveling down through the southernmost part of Canaan, they came to a place called Beersheba. Now, that's kind of a strange name, but you may remember that name from earlier in our series. This was the same place that Jacob's father, Isaac, and his grandfather, Abraham, had dug freshwater wells many years before. And when Jacob arrived there, he offered sacrifices to the Lord. And later that night, God appeared to Jacob and he said, I am the God of your father. Don't be afraid to go down to Egypt, for I will make you into a great nation there. I will go to Egypt with you, and I will surely bring you back here again. And Joseph's own hand will close your eyes. Now, to put this in layman's terms, God is telling him, hey, I haven't forgot about the promise that I made to you, to your daddy Isaac, and to your granddaddy Abraham. I will indeed make you a great nation of people. You will indeed inherit this land of Canaan as your own land. But because this famine is so severe, the way I'm going to preserve you is by taking your whole family to Egypt. You will grow into a great number of people down there, and when the time is right, I'm going to bring you back to Canaan. You're going to inherit this land. And furthermore, you are definitely going to see your son Joseph before you die. Now, in the next several verses, we see Jacob and all of his boys and his grandchildren that are arriving down there in Egypt. Now, the names of his sons and all of his grandsons are given. And because of time constraints and because some of those names are really, really hard to pronounce, we don't have time to get into all of that. But take a look at verse 27 if you have your Bible open. This is where we read the number of Jacob's family. Now, including Joseph, his wife, and his two boys, we're told that the number in the family of Jacob was 70 people. God sent 70 people down there. Now, did he keep his promise to turn them into a great nation? Let me give you a little piece of evidence. Let me quote a little fact to you. You can make that decision for yourself. More than 400 years later, when old Moses led the children of Israel out of Egypt, those 70 people that went back into Canaan numbered nearly 2 million. I'd say God made good on his promise. Now, as Jacob and his family enter Egypt, he sends his son Judah to get directions to a place in Egypt called Goshen. This was actually the most fertile part of the whole land of Egypt, and Joseph had told them that's where he wanted them to go. When Joseph heard that his dad and his brothers were there in Goshen, man, he jumped on his chariot. He gave his horses a little shot with the whip, and they took him out there to Goshen as fast as they could run. And when he got there and saw his dad, he jumped out of the chariot. He ran up, threw his arms around his dad, and cried as he stood there and hugged him for a long time. And when Jacob saw his son, he said, Joseph, I can finally die a happy man because I've seen your face again, son. Now Joseph says to his brothers, this land of Goshen is the best land in all of Egypt. Now Pharaoh, me and him are tight. But because you guys are my family, I got a feeling he may want you to live in town with us. That's not a good idea. You and your livestock are going to be way, way better off out here in the country in Goshen. So here's my plan. I'm going to go tell Pharaoh that all of you are shepherds, which is the truth. Now, when he hears that you're shepherds, he's probably going to let you stay out here in Goshen because according to Egyptian custom, shepherds are kind of dirty and are not very civilized and they don't really want them intermingling with the town folks. So just let me take care of this. If he asks you what you do for a living, you just confirm what I say. Joseph's plan worked perfect. He went and told the Pharaoh that his brothers were shepherds. Pharaoh said, hey, great, let him live out there in the land of Goshen. I'm happy for him to be there. And if one of your brothers is extremely talented and has exceptional ability with livestock, please put him in charge of my animals as well. Then Joseph took his father Israel in to meet the Pharaoh. Pharaoh saw this old man standing before him and he said, how old are you? And Israel said, listen to this. He says, my years have been difficult and few. Now, some of you here today may feel like that. Your years have been difficult and few. And even if your years have been many, time marches on pretty quick, doesn't it? He says, I'm 130 years old. And that might sound old to you, Pharaoh, but my age does not equal that of my ancestors. And Jacob was telling the truth. His grandfather, Abraham, lived to be 175. His father, Isaac, died at the age of 180. And after they talked a while, Jacob blessed the Pharaoh, and they all went out with the family to live in Goshen. We're told that Joseph provided food and supplies for his family, and they all had much, much more than they needed. But in the other parts of Egypt, the famine continued to rage on. And eventually, those folks in Egypt and in the surrounding nations, they had spent every bit of money they had to buy grain from Joseph. These folks were flat broke, and if they hoped to survive, they needed food. They needed it bad. So they went to Joseph and they said, Joseph, we don't have any money left. You've got everything, and if we don't get food, we're going to die. So Joseph said, listen to me. Let me tell you what to do. Bring all your livestock and trade them for food. You bring your animals, I'll give you food. The people did what he said, and not only did Pharaoh accumulate all the money in Egypt, but now he owned all of the livestock. The following year, the famine was still in full force, and they came back and they said, Joseph, we cannot hide the fact from you that you have all of our money. You have all of our livestock. We're hungry again. We don't have anything left but our own bodies and our land. Please buy our land from us and let us be enlisted as servants to Pharaoh so that we might have food. So Joseph bought all the land. He gave him food. All the land belonged to Pharaoh now. Then Joseph told him, here's the way this is going to work. I'm going to give you seed to plant, but when the crops come in, and all your future crops, you have to take 1/5, 20% of those crops, and you have to give them to Pharaoh. The other 4/5, the other 80%, that's yours to keep. But this is going to be a lasting ordinance here in Egypt. Now, on the surface, it might seem like Joseph's really taking advantage of these folks. But if you look at the next verse here, the people are happy with the deal. They think it's great. They said, you have saved our lives, Joseph. May we find favor in your eyes. We'll do exactly what you say, and we will serve Pharaoh. Now, while everybody there in Egypt had lost all their money, all their livestock, all their land, and pretty much all their freedom, because they were now servants to Pharaoh, over in the land of Goshen, where the Israelites lived, it was a completely different story. These folks were doing very well. They accumulated large areas of property. They had huge flocks and herds of livestock. They made lots of money and were told that they greatly increased in number. And then we see that Jacob lived the last 17 years of his life down there in Egypt, and they were very good years. The scriptures say that before he died, at the age of 147, he called in Joseph to see him. And he said, son, if I've found favor in your eyes, I want you to promise me something now. When I die, don't bury me down here in Egypt. Take me back to Canaan, the land that God promised to give our ancestors. There's a cave there in Canaan called the Cave of Machpelah, and that's where our fathers are buried. Joseph promised to do exactly what his dad told him. And although Jacob was very near death, we're told that he worshiped the Lord as he leaned on his staff. Now, as we jump into chapter 48, the time of Jacob's death is getting real close. When Joseph hears that his father is about to go, he rushes the scene and he takes his two sons with him. We first met Joseph's two sons a couple weeks back in chapter 41. The oldest son's name was Manasseh, and the youngest son's name was Ephraim. Now, don't forget those names, because we're going to talk about why this is important here in just a minute. When Joseph arrived, somebody said, "Hey, Jacob, your boy Joseph's here to see you." And the scriptures say that Jacob rallied his strength, and he was able to sit up on the edge of the bed, and he called his son in. And he said, "Joseph, when God first appeared to me in Canaan, he blessed me and told me that my descendants would become a mighty nation and one day inherit the land. From this day forward, your two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, are going to be counted as my sons, just as all your other brothers are considered my sons. When our descendants return to Canaan, the children of your boys, Ephraim and Manasseh, they're going to receive a portion of that land as an inheritance, just like the other sons. Ephraim and Manasseh are going to become the father of two of the 12 tribes of Israel. They won't be any different than Reuben or Simeon." And then he said, "But any sons born to you after this time will be counted as your own sons." Now, I don't have any doubt. Some of you are sitting there saying, "Man, this is confusing. I don't understand why this is happening." I'm going to try to explain it as clearly as I can. You see, more than 400 years after these events took place, the Israelites did leave Egypt. They returned to the land of Canaan, and it became known as the nation of Israel that we see today. Now, this land was divided up into 12 different parts, and each of the 12 parts went to one of Jacob's 12 sons. You with me so far? Now, here's where things get a little confusing. One of Jacob's sons was a guy named Levi. Now, Levi, his descendants, when they came into Israel, they did not receive a portion of land as an inheritance. Why? Because those guys, the descendants of Levi, became the holy priests and the guys who would serve in the temple of the Lord. They served the Lord on a full-time basis. So they couldn't take on the additional responsibility of planting crops and taking care of livestock. So what God did was, he told the children of Israel, "Levi will not receive an inheritance. All you other tribes, set aside a few cities where the Levites can live because they serve me on a full-time basis." So now what do we have? We have 12 different tracts of land, but only 11 sons of Jacob. So what are we going to do? Jacob was smart. He said, "Joseph, instead of me giving you one tract of land, I'm going to count your two boys as my sons, and I'm going to give each one of them a tract of land. So the descendants of you, Joseph, will actually have two portions of this land. They will become two tribes in Israel, and your 10 brothers will be the other 10 tribes." Folks, this is where we get the names of the 12 tribes of Israel, and this is how the land was allotted. That's why it's like this. Now, after Jacob explained all of this to Joseph, his mind began to go back to the past, and he began to think about Joseph's mother, his beloved wife, Rachel. Now, if you were here for some of these earlier messages, you know that Jacob actually had children by four different women. But the wife that he loved the most was Joseph's mother, Rachel. She had given birth to him and his little brother, Benjamin. And he begins to reminisce, and he's telling Joseph, "You know, when we were almost to the city of Bethlehem, your mom, she was in real hard labor with your baby brother. And she died there on the road to Bethlehem after giving birth." Now, Joseph was probably pretty young when this happened, but he was certainly old enough that he remembered his mom. And he and his dad talked about that a little while. And then Jacob looks and he sees that there's two other people standing there with Joseph. But the scriptures say that his eyes were failing because of his age. So while he could see two people standing there with his son Joseph, he couldn't tell who they were because his eyes were so bad. And he said, "Who's standing there with you?" And he said, "Well, Dad, that's my two boys." Ephraim and Manasseh, you know, the my sons that you just told me were now counted as your boys. And Jacob says, bring those boys over here to me so I can bless them. He says, Joseph, I never thought I was going to see your face again. And now God has allowed me to see your children as well. Now, when Joseph brings his two boys forward, he puts his oldest son, Manasseh, in front of Jacob's right hand. He puts him here. And the youngest boy, Ephraim, he puts in front of his left hand over here. Why did he do that? Because according to custom, the oldest son was referred to as the son of his father's right hand. He was the sign of his strength. So when the father handed down blessings, he would put his right hand on the oldest son's head. He would receive a special blessing and a double share of the inheritance. But look what Jacob did. He crosses his arms like this. He puts his right hand on Ephraim's head, who was the younger brother. And he begins to bless the boys. And when Joseph sees what he's doing, he goes, hey, wait a minute, Dad. You got this wrong. You got your right hand on the youngest boy's head. Put your hands the other way. And Jacob says, no. Your oldest son, Manasseh, he will become a great leader. But his younger brother Ephraim will be greater than him. Now, where have we heard this before? Remember the story of Jacob and Esau? Jacob was the younger brother, but God told his parents that he would become greater than his older brother. And now here we have Jacob telling Joseph his youngest son would become greater than his oldest son. And then Jacob tells his boy Joseph, when he got done blessing his sons, he says, and to you who was one over your brothers, I want to give you a special piece of land. It's a piece of land that I took from the Amorites with my sword and my bow. This is my personal gift to you, Joseph. Now, many years later, we're going to find out next week that Joseph was actually buried on that piece of land that his father gave him. Now, after he finished speaking with Joseph, he called in all 12 of his boys to bless him before he died. Now, we're about to wrap it up here. We don't have time to examine all 12 of these blessings because they're rather lengthy. But we are going to take note of a few things that Jacob says here. Now, Reuben, he was the oldest of the 12 boys. He was supposed to receive the birthright. He was supposed to receive the special blessing, the double share of the inheritance. Remember what he did? He had an affair with his stepmother. Jacob hadn't forgot that. He says, you will no longer excel, Reuben, for you went upon your father's bed and defiled it. Because of that sin, Reuben forfeited all of his rights as the firstborn son. Now, Simeon and Levi, they were the next two oldest in line. You may remember from an earlier message, when Jacob and his family came into the city of Shechem, Jacob had those 12 boys, but he only had one daughter. Her name was Dinah, and man, she was really good looking. And the son of the man who ruled Shechem, he raped Jacob's daughter. In retaliation for that, not only did Levi and Simeon kill that guy and his dad, they put the whole doggone city to the sword and killed every single guy in it, kidnapped all the women and children, and took them as plunder. Jacob says, Simeon and Levi, you're men of violence. May your anger be cursed. Then he comes to Judah, son number 4. By this time, Judah has come to be recognized as kind of the leader among his brothers. Listen to this blessing that he gives him. He's actually making a prophecy about the coming Messiah one day. He says, Judah, your father's sons will bow down to you. The scepter, the king's scepter, will not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet, until he comes to whom it belongs, and the obedience of the nation is his. He's saying that all nations will one day be in obedience to a descendant of Judah. Now, this prophecy was partially fulfilled by one of Judah's descendants, a guy named King David. He ruled the nation of Israel for more than 40 years, but the ultimate fulfillment of this prophecy will be made when the Lord Jesus, who is also an earthly descendant of Judah, when he comes back to set up his kingdom here on earth. Now, Jacob goes on to bless all 12 of his boys. He gives a real special blessing to Joseph, and he calls him a prince among his brothers. And then in verse 28, we're told, all these are the 12 tribes of Israel, and this is what their father said to them when he blessed them, giving each man the blessing appropriate to him. Then he gives his sons these final instructions. He says, I'm about to be gathered to my people. That means I'm about to die. He says, bury me with my fathers in the cave of Machpelah in Canaan. Why does he want to be buried there so bad? He tells us, there, Abraham and his wife Sarah, my grandma and grandpa, they're buried there. There, Isaac and Rebekah, my mom and dad, they're buried there. And it was there that I buried my wife Leah. That's why he wants to be buried there. One real quick point before we wrap it up here. That cave is still there today, folks. It is called the Cave of the Patriarchs, and it is considered by Jews to be the second most holy site in all of Israel, second only to the Temple Mount where Solomon's Temple was built in Jerusalem. No extra charge for that. When Jacob finished giving these instructions, he drew his feet up into his bed, he breathed his last, and then he died. Now next week, we're going to wrap all of this up. We're going to have our final message from this series. We're going to examine the events that built and eventually divided and almost destroyed the nation of Israel. And we are going to see that the final part of God's plan for dealing with this nation is yet to be fulfilled. I hope y'all can make it back as we complete this series next week.